I have a little pad, and the pad says culture, people, numbers. I have to fill the box in. What did you do to advance the culture today? What did you do to advance your people today? That level of focus is superior to what 99% of CEOs do on a daily basis.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I'm Neil Timmons. I've got Trey Taylor here with me. He's the CEO of Taylor Insurance Services and Managing Director of Trinity Blue. His experience is pretty diverse, from technology to venture capital to commercial real estate. He's a well-known keynote speaker, has addressed multiple attendees at the Human Capital Institute and Ascend Conference. And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of things today, but his book is out. CEO only does three things. So we're going to touch on that. So I'm excited to have him here. Trey, how are you?
Neil, I'm well. Thanks for having me, man. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you. I appreciate you taking the time to connect up here. Tell me, you've done a diverse number of things, as you and I both know, but what was your entry, post-college? How'd you get involved in business?
Yeah. So my family's entrepreneurial for many generations. And as is typical in that kind of situation, the entrepreneur says, there's a lot of stress in the entrepreneurial life. Sure. I want my kids to be professional. I want to be doctors, lawyers, bankers or something like that. So I was definitely sort of pushed and encouraged, let's say, to go that route. And I ended up in law school. I really hated it. And so I kept going through it, and I'd come home and say, Dad, I think I'm going to quit. I really hate it. He says, well, you've already done a little bit of it. Keep going. And then so at the end of it, I found myself 3 years into it. And then I was staring the bar in the face. And at the same time, I had gotten an internship at a company, an internet company that became WebMD. Okay. And so I was the first sort of business development guy at WebMD, working for the corp dev guys and putting deals together and things like that. I never took the bar. I never looked back, because doing deals is what I love. I love that where you can reconcile a problem, put two people together, have the capital allocation done and all of that sort of thing. And so that's where I really cut my teeth in business per se. I went from there into venture capital, and have remained a venture capital and angel investor for the last 22 years since doing it as a career at that point. Have made stops along the way, of course, and then inherited the family business very unexpectedly in 2005 when my dad passed away at the age of 52 from what we now know was COVID, but we didn't have a name for it back then. And in the last 15, 16 years, my job has been to figure out how do you incorporate all of these sort of big company experiences and make them practicable and useful in the small company arena. And so that's sort of what brings me here today.
Yeah. Tell me about the family business. What is that?
So the core family business, it's morphed over time. The core family business is an insurance brokerage company, largely employee benefits, financial planning, high-end, client with life insurance, disability, those kinds of things. Very focused on entrepreneurial firms. That's our mission, is to help entrepreneurs sort of shed the weight and the work that comes with offering really high quality benefits.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. I want to talk about the book, because maybe you start here. What was the genesis of the inspiration to write it?
Yeah, easy. When we buried my dad and I showed up for work as the CEO the next day, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So I closed the door and I literally, I'm not kidding you at all, I Googled, how do you be a CEO? Because I didn't know what the job entailed. And what I found out over time was there is no job description in any business for the CEO. The idea is the buck stops here. Yeah. That's the one guy that we don't have to tell what to do. He'll tell everybody else what to do and that sort of thing. And largely that's true. But what it means is that the CEO is often the least focused person in the entire company. The great CEOs that we know are the ones that find their focus. That's the subtitle of my book, is Find Your Focus in the C-Suite. They find their focus and they work on the things that only they can work on. And that was a 15-year journey for me. As I got good at that, I had other you know, friends in my industry and other industries come to me and say, hey, can you help me? Can you coach me? Can you teach me? And eventually I heard it enough that they said, you know, you need to write a book. You need to put this out there so that people can learn it. And when COVID hit and the lockdown happened, I said, you know, I'm going to do one of two things. I'm going to go get my pilot's license, or I'm going to write this book. And I felt like the book sort of, I needed to deliver the book in order to earn the right to go be a pilot. So now I've accomplished both of those things. Yep. Yeah. But we brought the book out in late 2020.
Okay. Yeah. And so give me some context of the book. A CEO only does three things. Maybe what can you share that to help folks along the path to deeper understanding of what they should be doing, how they should be focused?
Yeah. So the first thing a CEO says when they hear the title of the book is, yeah, I wish I could do three things. You know, my to-do list is 8 miles long, right, and everybody in my organization has the right to add to it at any given moment during the day. And that's exactly the kind of thing that we fight about. The mission behind the book really is getting CEOs focused so that we don't burn out. Because, you know, if you're the CEO of a large public company and somebody's gunning for your job all the time and that sort of thing, you make enough money that if you burn out, you've got options. Mm-hmm. But if you run a 7-man muffler shop or something of that nature, and you're the owner and you're wearing all of those hats, if you burn out, it's over for a lot of people. Right. And so one of the things that I'm really passionate about is preventing that burnout for my CEO clients. Most of my clients come to me, and the first meeting is sunshine and rainbows, and the second meeting is them with their head in their hands saying, I don't know what I'm going to do if I have to do this for the rest of my life. And so we've formulated a really easy matrix, and the matrix is the CEO only does three things: culture, people, and numbers. And why those three? Because it's only the CEO that has the perspective, the elevation, the altitude in the organization to see all the problems, to see everything that needs to be fixed. And he's the only person, or she's the only person, that has the responsibility and authority to fix them. So you can't go to someone and say, hey, you're responsible for all people issues when they come up in the company from now on, you know, or you're responsible for all numbers or something of that nature. The CEO has to be the one that sets the agenda for each of those. Can you have a counterpart that helps you execute on those? Absolutely. And we all should. I have a CFO. Maybe I have a CHRO. I don't, but other people would. You know, I have a chief culture officer at another one of my clients. But the CEO is the one that sets the agenda and monitors progress on those three things.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place, batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batchleads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batchleads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month. How about this? But Trey, I run a 5-person real estate office. The book sounds great, but it's for big, ginormous teams, lots of people. But what say you?
Oh, I say that if you're not running these three things, then either they're not getting done, or they're getting done collectively as a group, which doesn't benefit the group. It benefits an individual. And so I get it. We have, you know, small company CEOs like myself. I have 19 people in my company, a small company CEO, right, for sure. I have a to-do list. I have a job to do. I have sales to make. I do have those things to do. But as the CEO, those are the three things that I do: culture, people, and numbers. And so, Neil, the hack is that before I open an inbox, before I do anything in the morning, I have a little pad. And the pad says Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And it says culture, people, numbers. I have to fill the box in. What did you do to advance the culture today? What did you do to advance your people today? How did you address your numbers today? That level of focus is superior to what 99% of CEOs do on a daily basis. And that's what I'm trying to get my people to do. Over time, what I discover is really great CEOs start doing a lot less of the other stuff because their team step up and do those things.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's imperative that it doesn't really matter how many people you have. Even if you're at a one person and you're looking to grow, all these things are a component of what a CEO must do.
Completely agree with you. I was at a mastermind. I was paid to speak at a mastermind, very exclusive mastermind. And these guys pay $200,000 a year to be a member of the mastermind. I signed at least three separate NDA, non-disclosure agreements with the organizer of the mastermind in Denver. There were two public company CFOs and three public company CEOs. Two of those CEOs, if I mentioned the company name, you would probably have them 8 feet away from you right now. So my question to the group, and they were all required to read the book before we came together. My question to the group was, look, largely my experience is in small company. I've never been the CEO of a public company. Does this hold any water for you guys? And lots of conversation around that. But the end verdict was absolutely public company CEOs should be using this book more than small company CEOs because our distractions are even more because we have one guy had 200,000 employees. 200,000. Can he interview every one of those guys when they get hired? No, of course not. Of course not. But setting the agenda around this is the kind of person that we want to work with is definitely the CEO's job to communicate that through the culture so that those people working in that culture produce the numbers that are necessary to, for in his position to keep Wall Street satisfied.
I'm reminded I was attending a class at the University of Iowa MBA program, and Doug Reichardt, who was the president and CEO of Holmes Murphy, very large insurance company you may know of the company. Sure. I remember him speaking, and it talked about a multitude of things, but I'll never forget what he said here. And this really applies in my mind. You know, it was most applicable to me, and still is today. Two small companies, two small businesses. Never let, for the CEO, never let the work get in the way of doing your job. Never let to-do list get in the way of doing what's required of you.
Exactly right. And so many times my clients, they just get so heads down in the inbox because it's like, I know that we have big problems to, you know, to tackle, and they're so ephemeral. Like, how do you fix a culture when you're swimming in the culture? That's a really tough thing to do. Right. What's easier? Answer the last 15 emails.
Correct.
It's much easier. I'll pick up the phone and get yelled at by a client before I want to tackle some huge fundamental issue to the identity of my company, right? And we see that all the time. The problem is not one of those 15 emails solves the existential crisis for the CEO long-term, that burnout issue. And that's why you have to eat that frog one bite at a time, but you've got to get that off your plate. And I'm telling you, I've seen the pre and the post on that, and they are different humans working in the finished organization than they were the people starting at the bottom of the mountain to get up there.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It's a, well, I mean, it's an impactful book for those who really, change has got to come from the inside, you know, and that oftentimes for, and it sounds like you started there as well by sitting down there, Googling it internally, meaning your oneself, and then internally in the organization to change everything that that ultimately will change the exterior of your organization, your look, your feel, how you interact with the clientele, and the impact that one can make in the community.
Absolutely. And so the first third of the book is all about how do you understand people and yourself up front? So we're all created in three dimensions, an intellectual and emotional dimension, which we know about. We get taught that in school.
That's right.
You know, we learn intellectual things and how to think through math equations. And in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. We learn facts and figures like that. And emotionally, as you grow up and mature, hopefully, you begin to get a hold on how do you manage and regulate your emotions appropriate to the circumstances at hand. The thing that we don't really learn in any kind of educational setup is that third dimension, which is, I call it the I am dimension. So you have the I think, the I feel, and the I am. In that third dimension is the identity. How do you manage and grow towards a very intentional version of yourself? And if you can do that, you can begin to recognize that other people are trying to do that. They're groping in the dark just the same way you are. And if you begin as a CEO to help them become the person they were supposed to be, most of them are supposed to be that person in your company. Some of them aren't. That makes firing decisions a lot, I won't say easier, but a lot more palatable.
Yeah.
It makes letting people go, sort of, you know, encouraging people to grow outside the organization also very easy and palatable. You know, it's a real thing if you understand yourself and then you can see how other people are affected by the same understandings of themselves. So we spent an entire third of the book on that topic. And that's one of the things that of all the gracious feedback that I've received, people have said, this is impactful to me. I'm teaching my kids this. My team is happy about this, you know, that kind of thing. So that's gratifying to hear that. But yeah, you know, who wants to follow a man or a woman who doesn't know who they are? Nobody.
Right. Correct. Yep. You're absolutely right. I want to pivot. You recently became a pilot or licensed pilot. How long had that been a goal of yours?
It's something that was in the back of my mind for a long time. Yeah. When I was in high school, there was a couple of kids in high school that actually got their pilot's license before they got their driver's license. And I thought, man, that's really cool.
You know, that's way cool.
Things I can't. Yeah. And so I'd always sort of thought about it. When pandemic came and the travel industry became so difficult to engage with, when the government came out with all kinds of insane financial incentives to buy and write off certain equipment, all of that sort of thing, the stars lined up. And I said, I'm going to buy this plane and I'm going to learn to fly. I'm only going to train in that airframe. I'm going to learn to fly it. And I have to say, I got into it because I wanted a mode of conveyance. I am in it now because I'm absolutely hooked and I love it. Last night, my wife and I decided we wanted to go 500 miles away for a nice dinner. We zoomed out, got that dinner, zoomed back in last night and felt so very fancy, you know, that we were able to do that. But we had a great time and we wouldn't have been able to do it otherwise. Because I think I had mentioned to you, I kind of live in the middle of nowhere. I'm right on the Georgia-Florida line, 3 hours from Atlanta, 3 hours from Orlando. My town is called Valdosta. Nice place to live, great place to raise kids. But, you know, your options are limited here. Well, the plane really opens that up for us. And so that's the whole thought process behind why we pulled the trigger when we did.
No, that's terrific. Talk to me about insurance and then real estate. So folks in the real estate space and who have businesses, I guess, how do you interact with them and how do you help serve those and who are in the process of building a business and maybe, you know, are looking forward to have some assets to protect one day pass those on?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're big believers in intentionality and structured thinking. And so in 2019, we had three liquidity events that happened in the family. So I unfortunately lost my brother. My brother left a nice estate and a lot of liquidity in life insurance because he had done what we recommended all our clients do is to buy way tons of life insurance. Sure. He died at the age of 43 and he has a family, has two children.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So we had a lot of cash, you know, on hand from that transaction. We were angel investors in Airbnb, and Airbnb went public in early 2020. And then the family had a piece of beachfront property in Jacksonville, Florida for 40 something years. And we sold that. Now, I do wish we had held on to that. I wish my brother was still here.
Yeah.
that property was, you know, available 2 years later to sell at crazy real estate prices like today. But anyway, I found this, you know, I found myself sort of on this, you know, this lake of cash. Like, what do you do with it?
Right.
And it's a situation that you think, well, this is where we want to be, right? We all want to have a lot of cash. But the effort of putting that cash to work intelligently and not losing anything, it's not speculative cash,
right,
it really prompted me to do some thinking. So I sort of convened a family meeting. We have four generations in the family. And I said, I really think that we all ought to contribute our assets to a family office. We'll structure it correctly. Every generation will have representation on the board and that sort of thing. But it is time for us to do that and invest sort of as a mass instead of each of us trying to do little things along the way, fingers crossed that it works. So my real focus in the past couple of years has been doing that. And I've been helping clients set up some version of that for themselves. And obviously, that philosophy is informed by life insurance and disability and long-term care and those kind of insured products. You always want to insure the thing that you know is going to happen. And so that's a lot of what we do as far as the financial planning practice goes. And then the coaching comes along with it sometimes. So a ton of my coaching clients are in the real estate business. And I love working with real estate guys because they're so functional ADD, you know, but every day they're putting numbers up on the board. They're moving that football a yard, a 3 yards, a 20 yards at a time. And it's exciting as a coach to be able to work with somebody and give them that deeper observation and understanding of themselves while they are doing things. And I don't have a single real estate client that I don't say, hey, here's what you should do. And they say, yep, that's what I should do. And they go right after it.
Yeah.
And that's gratifying as a coach.
Yeah. An ideal client on the real estate side looks like what for you?
You know, somebody who has time and intentionality enough to get to somewhere they want to be. Hmm. I don't know that there's a dollar figure. I don't know that I've ever thought about that, but it needs to be enough that they can take and spend probably low five figures, frankly, to get on the path. And then really, I'm way more interested in people that are pumping the gas than people that are pumping the brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. No, that's terrific. It's been fun to interact. You know, I have bought one or two pieces from a family office, family real estate office, who I know well here locally. And it's fun to see how they're structured, how they interact, and how there's so much thought and intention behind what, you know, was probably put together a couple generations ago to leave a legacy, to build a legacy, and to create a interesting and dynamic family environment that will last for generations. Very impactful.
Yeah, the mindset is completely different and it colors even your daily actions. And so that, you know, we all say, oh, I'm not the owner, I'm the steward for the next. Well, in a family office, you literally are the steward for the generations that are to come. So my commitment when we formed ours was to take four generations and to manage wealth so that it would be available for the coming four generations. That's the end of my job. So I'm also not committing that, you know, I'll be there for 500 years. We're looking at, you know, 120 to 200 years. Well, then the question becomes, how do you invest for something that'll be around in 200 years?
Yep.
So, you know, I do a lot of multifamily syndication. Well, those apartments are not going to be there in 200 years.
Right.
That's not the answer. So what is going to be? Then you start looking to say, well, what do you see today that was here 200 years ago? We don't have a 200 year answer, but 100 years ago, we've just done a piece of a skyscraper in Manhattan because that historic building, very long-term building, you know, is definitely going to be there. It's definitely going to be a producing asset over all of that period of time. And we've put as much as we can into that. So that's the cornerstone of that 100 year philosophy. And then we back it all the way down to, you know, short-term one year money is the first bucket that we structure.
Yeah. It's interesting. My brother spent a lot of time in Asia. And so as a result, I've got a lot of education from Asia, from his experiences there. It reminds me of much more, you know, a Chinese mindset, if you will, where they are, even at a political environment, they are playing a very long game that doesn't look anti-American, if you will. The Americans more quarter to quarter, year to year, and they're more generation to generation. You know, what's 50 or 100, or they're used to dynasties, right? So how far out are they going? And it's much more likening to that. And I think it's just terrific because it requires a very different mindset and thought processes to be able to play that long of game.
It does. And one of the things when I decided that this was the right thing for us is I got into study groups and masterminds and that sort of thing with other members of family offices. And I've learned just little throwaway comments have been so interesting to me. So one of the guys in my mastermind, they manage 400 million euro and their family has been in the Philippines. They're Spanish. They've been in the Philippines since we knew the Philippines were there and own all sorts of huge consumer brands in that country. And I said to him, like, yeah, I'm not going to tell you anything because you have so much more than I have. And he said, it's just zeros. The only difference is zeros. And that was helpful to me, you know, so that if I'm managing $1 million budget for a project, am I really doing anything different than I'm managing 100 million, except that I have more zeros and probably more people and that sort of thing. But complexity of what we do is not necessarily 10 or 100x, you know, above what we're doing. So that was very helpful. That was one of the mindset issues that was interesting to me.
I'm going to take that one step further for the audience's sake. So oftentimes we get caught up in real estate with, I'm going to buy a duplex, a fourplex, whatever, versus a 40 unit versus a 100 unit versus a 300 unit. And it's at some point, exactly what you just said, it's simply just a function of zeros. Property management is property management.
That's right. Exactly right. And, you know, maybe it's a little different because maybe there's 40 units on one site and 100 on another.
Mm-hmm.
But once you adopt the mindset that the principles of governance are the same for that 40 as it is for the 140, then your behavior changes. And that's what I was meaning before.
Yep.
Getting that family office mindset means today for me, you know, we don't indulge quite as much in things that don't have a return anymore.
Sure.
I never understood why really rich people didn't want to pay taxes, you know, when I was a lot younger. Well, the reason is not that they're greedy or unpatriotic or anything like that. Taxes have no return for the family.
Yeah.
And so we're actively minimizing our taxes,
sure,
you know, on that strategy as well. Not that everybody doesn't want to pay less taxes, but you really have to understand everything as a function of generational return. Warren Buffett has a great story that when he was 12 years old, somebody gave him a book about Columbus. And in the book, it said Columbus brought home $10 million worth of silver, or whatever the number was. And Buffett said, well, if he earned, 12 years old, of course he would do this, he earned 8% a year, a return on that, and it was 500 years ago, you know, he'd have $12 trillion or something like that.
Yep.
And that's the thinking that you have to do, that every dollar you spend today is potentially $1 million in 20 years, 50 years.
Right.
Gosh, at these inflation rates, even more than that.
Correct. Yeah, you're right about that. Hey, I'm going to move on to our final segment, what I call 4-4 Impact.
4-4 Impact.
What is your favorite quote?
Oh, this is a good one. So I don't know if I can show you this, but I'm a huge note card guy. And so I have hundreds of note cards, and I've made this a practice since I was in high school, that when I hear good quotes, I write them down.
Yeah.
I always have 10 or 12 around, and I review them throughout the day. I had a call that ended earlier today, and I just reviewed the 5 or 10 in front of me. There's a card from the world-famous photographer whose last name was Karsh. He photographed the famous picture of Winston Churchill, you know, where he's looking sort of angry.
Yes.
And that, and he did that because he snatched a Churchill cigar away from him. He was just that kind of really artist when it came to that sort of thing. He said, though, when they interviewed him, they said, you photographed all these world leaders, all of these famous people. What do you learn from them? And he said, look, when I'm setting up the camera and they're just sitting there with their own thoughts, a loneliness comes over them. And he said, the quote specifically is, the loneliness of great men is part of their ability to create. And here's the real key. Character, like a photograph, develops in darkness. And what do I take from that? So what's the action? That's my consistent question I annoy my friends with is, what does it mean for me? What it means for me is when I go through dark times, I have to realize that development is taking place. Yeah. If it isn't, I have to get out. Right, I have to not go through those dark times if there's no purpose for it. Suffering without purpose is depression, and I don't want to be in that.
Right.
And so I have been, but I don't want to be. So with that in mind, you know, I really try to make the low parts of the hike pay off when I'm at the summit.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. I've got a question for you. Are you enjoying the podcast? I sure hope you are. And if you are, may I ask you a personal favor? Would you mind going to iTunes and leaving a written review and a 5-star review? If you do that, send me a screenshot to my office. I want to send you back a list as a thank you. It's a list of the top 20 best lists to market to in order to find motivated sellers. This list has been curated by my office over years of direct marketing to sellers. This will either shortcut your path to finding the best list to start marketing to, or it's sure to add to what's already working. You can send that screenshot of your review to marketing@realgritpodcast.com. That's marketing@realgritpodcast.com. Terrific. What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
Softball question. It's what our concept of ourselves are. So my great mentor, Ron Willingham, was himself mentored by Maxwell Maltz, who wrote a book in the 60s called
Psycho-Cybernetics.
Everybody has this book on their bookshelf. About three of us have read it. Yep. Right. And Ron said, one of us have understood it. You know, it's that sort of deep of a book.
Yes,
but in a nutshell, here's what it says. You and I form a self-image. That self-image, we then make unconscious choices to make true in the world. The problem is that we form it subjectively and we try to activate it objectively. That's not possible. Mm. And it's not also legitimate. So the great joy of any of the professional activity that I do or the personal fathering or mentoring that I do as well is taking people and showing them that their self-image is only what they decide it to be. And so when somebody gets to a point where they make $1 million a year or 10 million a year, that is still just a choice to be that person instead of somebody else. And to flip it around, how many people that you know and in the family reunion group and that sort of thing, you know, you guys transform lives by taking people from an hourly sort of mindset and redefining their self-image with and for them into something more. So a very long-winded answer that when the inner work is small, the outer work can't be great. And so we have to work on that inner work and it comes down to self-image. I am a man who does this. I am a man who does this. I earn this, and, you know, all of those things.
And that inner must lead the outer, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. It does. I mean, does it, must it? I don't know. It does.
That's it what does. Do yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Outside of what you do on a day-to-day basis, what are you most passionate about?
So piloting is the new thing for us. You know, we really get into it. We choose a thing sort of every 5 or 6 years and just obsess over it and get really into it. So I started drinking wine when I was in college and I'm a sommelier now because of it. You know, and I went through a 5-year process that nobody wanted to talk to me because that's all I could talk about.
Yeah.
You know, I'm annoying people at dinners now about piloting and that kind of thing. We also really sort of obsess. I have a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old that just found out that we're having a sort of a bonus baby as well. I don't want to leave that baby out of the conversation. Yeah. Yes. But, you know, we sort of obsess around how do we teach kids, because we think that all of it comes down to how do you teach them to make good choices.
Yeah.
And so we are constantly saying, hey, let's examine that choice that you just made, even if it was a small choice, and say, is there any better way for you to have made that choice? And we teach that a lot as well. So I'm quite passionate about that. I think one day I might write a parenting book, but I feel like I'd better get my kids raised well first.
Yeah, that's fair. What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
In the community, I have a passion and a heart for those who weren't born as privileged as I am. I was. And so I spent 10 years as the chairman of our local homeless shelter. I'm in the process right now of getting a FEMA trailer with a shower and a washer and dryer that you can pull up to the homeless sort of encampments and let those guys have their showers, let them wash some clothes. We just bought a bunch of cotton monogrammed robes so that as they're sitting there, you know, washing their clothes, because many of them have one or two sets of clothes.
Right.
That's my favorite way. It's almost totally selfish because I feel good about doing that kind of work. But my hope is always that if I were ever in that situation, somebody that had more than I did would remember me and not judge me for it.
Yeah. Yeah. For folks who want to connect with you, they want to follow you, they want to learn more with you about you, how can they do so? And they want to find your book. Where can they do all that?
Yeah, the book is on Amazon and the Audible book launched about 2 months ago.
Great.
All of it's impressive to me because I, you know, you never know if you put something out there that something's going to go, but it's doing very well. Yeah. My publisher said, you have to read the audiobook. And I thought, nobody wants to hear me do that. But anyway, we did it and it's going very well. So you can find that CEO Only Does Three Things on Amazon, Audible, Book Baby, all of those kinds of places. Okay. Connecting with me for consulting, trinity-blue.com is my consulting page. Can drop me a line there, trey@trinity-blue.com. And then I write a newsletter whenever I feel like it. So sometimes it's 5 times a week, sometimes it's once every 2 weeks. But when I think that things are necessary to be said and shared and interesting things come along, that is plantyourflag.live. And so the idea there is let's plant our flag on a topic and explore this topic a little bit. So I write about venture capital, I write about wine, insurance, a little bit about politics, but not partisan stuff, you know, more of the mega trends that we see in the political world and how that might affect small business. We'll obviously talk about CEO stuff a lot as well.
Oh, that's terrific. We'll make sure we get all the links posted below in the show notes for everybody. I appreciate you taking the time to connect up here. You've got a wonderful story and very fascinating. You're into all sorts of things. It makes it super interesting. And the book, you know, I know it's deeply impactful for those who sit at a level where they impact and lead an organization of any size. So I appreciate you coming on and chatting a little about it.
Well, Neil, thanks for having me. And thanks for doing this kind of work. You know, people need to have a place that they can go and sort of expand their knowledge and horizons. So I congratulate you for doing that.
No, I appreciate that. It's a lot of joy. So thanks a ton.
All right.
Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time.
If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.